Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, November 23rd, 2020. The South Sudan police detained four university students during a protest in Juba.
We were just calling our salon, and then police confront us. They beat us and they throw us into the devil.
And the opposition SPLM-IO faces an internal opposition.
An opposition within the opposition. In fact, I already said I'm not an opposition within the opposition, but I'm a corrector within the opposition. The majority of the SPLM-IO is playing with me.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A senior member of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition says his group, under the leadership of first Vice President Riek Machar, has no ability to effect changes in South Sudan. Duer Tut Duer is a member of the SPLM-IO National Liberation Council, who would say he has launched an opposition within the SPLM-IO.
This organization is going to achieve its objective if and only if Dr. Riek Machar is removed from the chairmanship of the SPLM-IO. But if he is there, the SPLM-IO is going to fail because it will not be the first time for a movement led by Riek Machar to fail. It will be the third or the fourth.
You're calling for the removal of Dr. Riek Machar from the SPLM-IO. In other words, you're challenging the core of the movement.
Everything is possible because they will learn that the SPLM-IO is not going to achieve its objective. The SPLM-IO is not going to make it in the coming election. They will think twice and wise.
It's an open secret that you have been positioning yourself as an alternative to Dr. Riek Machar. Am I wrong?
The SPLM-IO is a nationwide movement, but there are some elements around him who try sometimes to make this SPLM-IO has a movement that belongs to Nuer. And there are many people who used to say that Teria cannot be removed because nobody that can replace him. And this is where some members of the SPLM-IO said there are people who can replace Dr. Teria. I was not alone. We may be three or four, but I think I had the courage to accept the challenge.
What kind of leadership will you bring to the SPLM-IO that is new? Because if you look at the SPLM-IO, its military and civilian structures, it's all dominated by one group. What is it that you're bringing that is different from what we are seeing right now?
No, the SPLM-IO is not for one ethnic group. The deputy chairman of the SPLM-IO is from Equatoria. The secretary general, who has just resigned, from Bahr al-Ghazal. So the people that Tariq appointed, he appointed them not because they are Nuer. He appointed them because he has relationship with them. And when those people were appointed, there was no meeting conducted by Nuer to select those people or to say, let us have the majority.
You are jumping to a conclusion by mentioning names of ethnic groups here. But what I'm telling you is the optics of the SPLM-IO in the eyes of the ordinary South Sudanese is that it's a movement that is only for certain people from certain region.
What I'm saying, those people are not there because they are from one ethnic group. They are there because they are relatives or friends of Dr. Riek Machar. And so you must have something specific or special with Riek Machar for you to be in that cabinet as a Nuer.
I remember interviewing Dr. Riek Machar in 2013 when he just declared the SPLM-IO as a resistance movement, and he said, I quote, that the SPLM stands for reform, stands for democratization, and wants to give an alternative to what is in South Sudan. Is that still the agenda you are trying to push through?
Of course, no. Because when we talk of reform, in the cabinet, the SPLM-IO have only 9 ministers. Is it possible for 9 ministers to propose reform in a cabinet of 30 ministers? And do you believe the SPLM-IG will accept reform proposed by the SPLM-IO? Of course, no. When we come to the parliament, we have 550. Now 128 are SPLM-IO. Can 128 members make a reform in a parliament of 550? Of course, the 422 are the one to make reform the way they want.
You have consecrated yourself as an opposition within the opposition. How do you see your contribution bringing reforms to the people of South Sudan?
I'm an opposition within the opposition. In fact, I would rather say I'm not an opposition within the opposition, but I'm a corrector within the opposition. The majority of the SPLM-IO stand with me. But those who have positions, they are also the most powerful because they have means of talking to people. They have means of sending people to where they want to send them because they have means, all right? But still, SPLM-IO is a movement. It will survive.
The politics of South Sudan is based on military might. You have to have some sort of a military behind you, whether they are from your own community or from wherever, or whether they exist or not. You have to say you have a military for you to survive in the game. Are you having military following within the SPLM-IO?
In fact, I wanted this to be a political issue and affairs of SPLM and leave the SPLA behind. But if it happened later on that Dr. Yak want to use the force of the SPLA in a political affairs, then we will see it. But I'm not for that because I don't see any reason for us to fight. I don't see any reason for our forces to fight themselves. This is why I don't talk of the SPLA-IO. I talk only on the affairs of the SPLM-IO. I talk on political ground.
That's Tut Dwer Tut, a member of the SPLM-IO National Liberation Council. He spoke with me last week from an undisclosed location in Upper Nile State. This program reached out to Dr. Riek Machar's spokesperson, James Gadet, for reaction to Tut's allegations. But Gadet referred this program to Peter Manoa, SPLM-IO Deputy Chairperson for Information. Manoa did not reply to request for an interview. Due to lack of access to the SPLM-IO leader, Riek Machar, we are playing a clip from an interview he gave us in 2013, where he articulated the ideals of his group. And what is the difference between your SPLM and the SPLM that is headed by President Salva Kiir?
The SPLM, SPLA, that I now head is one's democratization of the politics in the country. It wants pluralism to be done correctly. It wants free, fair elections to be conducted in the country. It wants good governance to happen in the country. So there is a big difference. You know that the struggle in the SPLM is the struggle of people who want the SPLM to be a democratic movement and others who want it to be a mouthpiece of one person, Salva Kiir Mayardit.
That's South Sudan's first Vice President Riek Machar speaking with South Sudan in Focus in 2013 when he launched his rebel SPLM-IO. The South Sudan National Police have detained four students of University of Juba during a protest. A police spokesman says the vice chancellor of the university called the police to quell protest by some students at the entrance of the university. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Dozens of police in police squad cars pulled up at the University of Juba's main gate and beat up about 10 students carrying placards using baton sticks this morning. Administrators reopened the institution today after closing it a month ago as a way to pressure students into paying their fees before attending lectures. After binding their hands and legs, Police officers threw four students in the back of the police vehicles and drove off to a nearby detention facility. Deng Mon, one of the arrested students, told South Sudan in Focus at the detention facility that the group was calling for the reinstatement of the students whom Vice Chancellor Professor Akech dismissed last month when they were confronted by the police. Mon says the students were exercising their free speech rights in a peaceful manner when police beat them with batons.
We were just calling our 11, and then police confront us. They beat us and they throw us into the jail.
In late October, Vice Chancellor Akech issued an order dismissing 14 students from the university and suspending 14 others for at least 2 years. Akech accused the students of provoking unrest on campus earlier this year. Mon says the purpose of today's protest was to shine a spotlight on what he calls the unlawful dismissal of his colleagues.
You can get students around the university and outside are presented to enter the university premises. So arrest and their colleagues are continuing the research, are continuing with the lectures. We are calling for the human rights group to look into the situation of those 28 students who have been dismissed. And we are also calling higher education ministry and other authority concerned with the ministry with education so that the students should continue their studies without interruption.
South Sudan National Police Service spokesperson Major General Daniel Justin says police were deployed to the campus after receiving a call from Vice Chancellor Professor John Akech.
Akech has reported the situation, and we, the police, we are the one to assess the security situation. So we make precautions, but what happened is that the fight is still to be confirmed. So our people are on the ground and sending us the details.
James Duor, another dismissed student, says today's police action at the university was uncalled for.
What happened today is really embarrassment and too much humiliation on the national figures that will change this country. So now, if you look at the gates, now they have transferred all the colleges outside and they put camps. And your college will be represented with the camp and they put something there. Notice that this one is this college. If you come with a receipt and you don't have ID, definitely you will first go there and you go back home until your ID will be out. Our cage already privatized the university and chancellor is keeping quiet. We are calling upon the chancellor to make decision over this.
Duor accused Professor Akech of hiking tuition fees in the midst of an economic crisis in the country and forcing students admitted under the government's scholarship program to pay fees meant for private students. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Khartoum, where Sudanese authorities say 7 medical doctors have died after testing positive for COVID-19. New infection cases of COVID-19 has been reported in Sudan. Nearly 100 people died from the disease over the past 1 month. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
A statement issued by the Sudanese Federal Ministry of Health on Sunday said the country lost 7 doctors who had worked tirelessly to treat COVID-19 patients, prevent the spread of the virus, and protect the lives of the Sudanese people. The government called their deaths as a huge loss for the country as it continues to fight the pandemic, and described the 7 doctors as true heroes who died defending their people. Health Ministry officials also mourned their deaths and expressed their condolences to the families of the doctors. The statement said Dr. Kamil Muhammad Abdullah, a consultant ophthalmologist, died November 11. Dr. Iman Ahmed Al-Bashir, director of Khartoum State's Department of Mother and Child Health Care at the Ministry of Health, died November 13. Dr. Naim Abdurrahman, an ophthalmologist in Al Jazeera State, died November 16. Dr. Izzeddin Mahmoud Abdu, a consultant in medical laboratories, died November 18. Professor Atom Surajuddin, a medical laboratories consultant, died November 18. Dr. Muhammad Ibrahim Tahir, a radiologist, died November 19. And Professor Ahmad Ihemer, a World Health Organization immunization expert and former director of child immunization in Blue Nile State, died November 19, all from COVID-19. Late last week, Sudanese education authorities postponed the reopening of schools for 2 weeks due to sharp rise in cases of COVID-19. Speaking to reporters in Khartoum over the weekend, Acting Health Minister Dr. Osama Ahmed Abdulrahim said COVID-19 is still spreading in communities across Sudan, and everyone, including government officials, needs to practice social distancing, wear face masks, and adhere to all other preventive measures.
All levels of government in the country, be it the Sovereign Council, Council of Ministers, corporations or government institutions, they should show a serious commitment to following the precautionary measures because the government is the lead.
Abdulrahim says the Minister of Health is still weighing whether or not to call for a total lockdown. Khartoum State Governor Ayman Khalid Nimir directed all public and private institutions in Khartoum State to operate at 50% of its normal workforce, with exception of essential sectors such as food factories and pharmacies. The order bans all large public gatherings, including wedding parties, graduations, and other social events. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, World Health Organization issues a new warning. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who do you listen to in difficult times and why?
Mostly, I listen to my wife and my dad, because these two people, they know me better than anybody.
I listen most to my mom because she's been through a lot. She has a lot of experience. Anytime I tell her something, she kind of has a solution to the problem.
The person to listen to in difficult times, one, your parents. Two, if you're married, then it should be your partner, because your partner is the person who is there with you every time.
In difficult times, I most of the time listen to my fiancé. When I speak to him, he gives me good advice that helps to calm me down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The World Health Organization says the antiviral drug remdesivir is not beneficial and should not be used in treating patients hospitalized for COVID-19. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
A WHO panel of international experts who reviewed the results of clinical trials have concluded there currently is no evidence that remdesivir improves survival of COVID-19 patients, no matter how severely ill they are. Head of Clinical Care at the World Health Organization, Janet Diaz, says the panel conditionally recommends against the use of remdesivir in hospitalized COVID-19 patients, regardless of the severity of their illness. The panel says the evidence shows the drug has possibly no effect on mortality.
Now, this did not prove that remdesivir does not have a benefit at all, and that's why it's a conditional recommendation. There can still be potential small benefit, maybe in a subgroup, which is why the panel also recommended continued enrollment into clinical trials.
Diaz suggests it might perhaps be better to focus on subgroups, such as severe patients versus critical patients, in future clinical trials. The WHO panel's recommendation is based on new evidence, which compared the effects of several drug treatments for COVID-19. It includes data from 4 international randomized trials involving more than 7,000 patients hospitalized for COVID-19. Bram Roschweg is a practicing ICU doctor in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and co-chair of the WHO panel. He tells VOA there's still ongoing uncertainty about the impact of remdesivir on survivability and mortality.
We're not saying that there's evidence that remdesivir doesn't work, but there's not good evidence that it does work. And there's not good evidence that harm is off the table. And so it was these considerations that the panel looked at, and they felt that the majority of people would not ascribe to a new therapy when the benefit was not there, and that there was still a potential for worsening outcomes and leading to increasing death.
In the meantime, the WHO panel notes alternative treatments exist that are cheap and widely available, such as corticosteroid dexamethasone, which have been shown to reduce death among severely ill COVID-19 patients. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on COVID, a group of young women in Yei River County are producing soap to help fight the spread of COVID-19 in the area. One of the women involved in the initiative says her group is helping women and persons living with disability with soap to wash their hands regularly. For VOA News, Daniel Friedemartin reports from Yei.
Wearing face masks and seated approximately 2 meters apart from each other, more than 20 women mixed chemicals in 20-liter jerrycans to produce liquid and bar soaps in Ye's 11 residential area. Asunta Araba, one of the women who is making soap to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, says the group decided to get involved after witnessing several vulnerable women and people with disabilities who could not afford to buy soap in the market.
Many people have been raising concern about the lack of hand washing detergents during awareness campaigns, and now we have started the production of liquid and bar soap in Yei Town. It is now easy for people to get soap to keep their hands clean all the time and reduce the spread of coronavirus.
Another woman, Harriet Abanga, says the group is now training women in other residential areas on how to make soap for use at the household level.
We now know how to produce liquid and bar soap for our families and neighbors so that all of us use soap for washing hands so that together we can mitigate the spread of COVID-19 in our residential areas.
Asunta and Abanga say the fight against COVID-19 requires a collective responsibility of all citizens rather than relying on the government and NGOs to provide solutions to health problems affecting South Sudanese communities. The soap-making initiative is supported by the Yei-based NGO Yamora in collaborations with the United Nations Mission in South Sudan. Yamora program manager Goya Robert says empowering women to locally produce hand soap is cost-effective and can help mitigate the spread of COVID-19 in densely populated areas.
For the bar soap, we are producing 100 boxes of them. And then for the liquid soap as well, we are producing 100 pieces of this 20-liter jerrycan. We are targeting hotspots where people are gathered in large numbers. For example, the civil hospital. We are targeting IDP camps. We are also targeting these border stages.
Justus on Victor, Yamora's executive director, says although his organization is empowering women to produce hand-washing detergents locally, access to production materials and equipment remains a challenge.
The women are given a skill to start doing on their own to respond to our problems. So the challenge here is that these chemicals are quite expensive, and they are not within Yei, or sometimes they can be available in Juba, Kampala, Nairobi.
Victor is calling on other aid agencies to step in and support women and youth groups to produce more hand soap to prevent the transmission of the virus. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei Town.
Following a hand recount of ballots, officials in Georgia certified U.S. presidential election results in the state, confirming that President-elect Joe Biden defeated President Donald Trump. Yet, the president shows no signs of conceding. White House correspondent Patsy Widakwaswara has the latest.
Despite supporters of President Donald Trump storming into the state capitol in Atlanta earlier this week, demanding investigation on claims of election fraud, on Friday, officials reaffirmed that Joe Biden has won the state of Georgia, following the largest hand recount of ballots in American history. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger.
The numbers reflect the verdict of the people, not a decision by the Secretary of State's office or of courts. or of either campaigns.
Meanwhile, the Trump campaign continues to claim the election was plagued by fraudulent voting.
That could have been Mickey Mouse. That could have been a dead person.
A claim repeated by the president, who on Friday added another accusation that pharmaceutical companies delayed announcing COVID-19 vaccine findings until after the election, a claim the companies have denied.
We had Big Pharma against us. We had the media against us. We had Big Tech against us. We had a lot of dishonesty against us.
Vanessa Beasley teaches presidential rhetoric at Vanderbilt University.
His strategy is consistent with his strategy all 4 years of governing. If he doesn't say it, then it can't be true. So just like we had fake news, now we're having obviously fake elections and trying to cast doubt on that institution just as he did the media.
Trump's legal team has failed to provide evidence of ballot fraud, a fact the Biden campaign is eager to point out. Bob Bauer from the Biden campaign legal team.
The Trump campaign and their allies have now lost a staggering 28 lawsuits in the 17 days since Election Day.
The Trump campaign has been floating the idea that Republican-controlled state legislators should dismiss Biden's victory in their states and assign electors that will vote for Trump instead. The move is unlikely to succeed, but damage to the perceived legitimacy of the election may already be done. William Howell is a professor in American politics at the University of Chicago Harris School of Public Policy.
The outcome of these efforts not so much will be that we're going to observe Trump being listening to Trump's second inaugural on January 20th, but rather that we're going to have tens of millions of Americans who are convinced that Biden cheated his way and that our politics are, to their core, rotten, which will yield a country that's all but ungovernable.
In a Morning Consult poll conducted in late October, 70% of Republicans said election results will be reliable. In mid-November, this number dropped to 27%. 45% of Republicans say Trump should concede eventually unless he can back up fraud claims, and 27% say he should not concede no matter what. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with the song Zawaj Ghali by Emmanuel Kembe. We've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Zawaj Ghali. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.